Hi, I'm Doug Gordon. This is Beta from Wisconsin Public Radio. Welcome back to our member drive. If you've already given, thank you for your support. And if you haven't yet, consider a contribution during the next hour. We here at Beta would certainly appreciate it. To thank you, we'll be treating you to a few of your favorite Beta moments. Let's kick things off with comedian Zainab Johnson. Her journey to comedy was pretty unique. Zainab grew up in Harlem as one of 13 children in a Muslim family. Her life changed when she was 17. She was struck by a drunk driver and spent a year and a half in the hospital learning to walk again.
Something like that happening at that age is really traumatic, and it, one, makes you very grateful to be spared in the very least, but also it made me, like, really look within. I think when I was a teenager, I was, like, coming into myself. I don't know if you know this, but I grew up Muslim, and I always covered up.
Yeah.
And then maybe around 15, I started to not cover up. And I think I was exploring, like, who I was as a young woman in the world. And trying to fit in and be popular and all of those things. And I think being hit by the truck, I think it did two things. One, it made me really, like, just make sure that what's in me has a strong foundation.
Mm.
And it also, I don't know, it made me really compassionate.
Yeah.
It made me really compassionate because there was another woman who was also pushing the back of the car with me. And her leg was amputated.
Oh, dear.
And so while I was laying there in the hospital, just in all of my vanity, like, oh, my God, this can't be happening to me. Somebody get me a plastic surgery. I remember, like, I had these, like, you know, gashes on my face, and some of my teeth were chipped, and, you know, and I was like, somebody make me look like I used to look, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then my friend hopped in on crutches, missing one leg. And I was like, it's the first time I ever thought, like, oh, there's always somebody worse off.
Yeah.
And not that you need to think about somebody being worse off to, like, appreciate your life, but it really does put things in perspective.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You went on to earn a mathematics degree, and then for a while you were working as a teacher. Why did you decide to give that up to pursue a career in stand-up?
My parents went to college but hadn't finished, and I just had it set in my mind that I was going to be the next generation that did something at least a little bit better, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so I was dead set on at least getting a degree, and math was something that I had always been good at, and some of the positive role models in my life were teachers. And so it just made sense to me to go into that direction, and actually, a friend of mine who had finished college maybe a year before I did, she was like, I'm moving to L.A. to be a famous actress. And I was like, oh, she can't be famous without me. And I just, you know, that same year, my dad had passed away. And
it was
just another, like, reminder, like, you know, time is of the essence, no regrets. Like, what are my intentions in this life? What am I seeking? You know, what's my legacy? What am I looking to do? And I'm not sure if later in life I'll become a teacher in a classroom, or maybe through comedy or some other platform I'll be teaching in other ways. But I just knew that wasn't what I was supposed to be doing at that time.
Yeah. Well, I think you are. I think it's fair to say that you are doing some teaching already with, you know, a lot of the content of your stand-up, I think.
I hope so.
Oh, I think you're doing it.
I hope so. I mean, it does feel better when people can take something of substance away from my act.
Yay! Yay, yay, yay! Give it up for my afro! It excites me because I had a shaved head for 7 years. I was never late anywhere. When I started growing it back, my friend was like, Zainab, I didn't know your hair grew like that. I was like what? I tried to lead her down a racism trap. I was like, how does my hair grow? She was like, you know, it's tight and coarse. I was like, oh, no, that's the misconception. My hair grows very straight. Then I walk out into the world and oppression makes it tight and coarse.
You grew up in Harlem as one of 13 siblings in a Muslim family. How has this life experience shaped your comedy?
I don't know if being Muslim has shaped my comedy. I mean, I talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
And for a very long time, I hated being Muslim. And not the actual belief of it, just the practice of it. As you know, it can be a very, like all religions, but I think more so it can just appear to be more strict.
Mm-hmm.
And there were certain things in the practice of Islam that just was a major inconvenience in my life as a kid, you know?
Yeah.
And it immediately set me apart from everybody else. And I didn't like that. And so I wanted to be as far away from Islam as possible. But while I was in college, I took an elective course. It was the history of religion, and it opened my eyes up to a lot of things that I just wasn't taught and didn't know, not only about Islam, but about Christianity, about Judaism, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that put me back in that had me sort of seek, okay, like, what do I believe? What do I stand for? And then it made me sort of research where my faith lied,
mm-hmm.
and I became proud of it.
Mm, yeah.
And then when I started, there's always been, like, a negative rhetoric regarding Islam in this country specifically and across the world. And I just felt like when I started comedy, any images of Muslims that I saw on TV or in media or, you know, there was a fear there.
Mm.
You know, I was in New York when 9/11 happened.
Mm.
And there was just a fear of Muslims there. And I was like, wow, well, I'm a Muslim and I don't want people to fear me. I don't want people to think that I have these same beliefs. So I have to give them another alternative to this identity.
Yeah. Besides your stand-up work, you also have your own podcast, which is called Honest Tea with Z. And Honest Tea is spelled H-O-N-E-S, capital T, capital E, capital A. Can you tell me a bit about your podcast and why you do it?
Absolutely. It's another way for the people who are interested in my comedy or my point of view to connect with me.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I'll be in Minnesota or Philadelphia or wherever, and you get to see me, and then for a whole nother year, you don't get to see me. And so this is a way for them to sort of directly connect with not only what's going on in the world, but what's going on in the world through my point of view. Welcome to Honest Tea with me, long time no Z, right? To the listeners that hit me like, hey girl, with all due respect, when are you putting out another episode? Thank you for holding me accountable and letting me know that you guys miss me when I'm gone, and I do apologize. The title came from, I was sitting in a car in New York. I was in a car, rather, with two other female comedians in New York. And one was asking for advice. And I'm typically, like, the bottom line person. Like, I can wrap it in, like, comfort, but I'm going to tell you the truth.
Uh-huh.
You know, I'm going to give you what is facts.
Yeah.
And so my friend was asking for advice, and I just broke it down. Like, I bought it. And she was like, okay, Honest Tea with Z. And I was like, oh, my God. I think that's the title of this podcast that I want to do. And I wanted to create a space where I could chat with my audience about things that may or may not be true, things that we're hearing.
Mm-hmm.
There's this whole, like, fake news phenomena.
Oh, yeah.
And then I also wanted to give, like, you know, give some factual information, too. But it's all, like, in line with my comedy, which is all a conversation.
Do you have a favorite joke that you're most proud of?
Yeah, I have a few. I think the joke that I enjoy telling any jokes that have to do with my family. Most recently, I really like the joke about me trying to figure out if my brother was gay.
Yes.
The journal joke. I love that joke.
It's 13 of us. Somebody should be gay, right? Statistically. They say 1 in every 5 Americans is gay. It's 13 of us. We should have 2.5. Like 2 and a bisexual, right? My younger brother, he was a good suspect. I stole his journal because I was like, I'm gonna crack this case. I was like, the information is in his journal. All I have to do is find it. We'll invite him out the closet. So I read his journal, come to find out he's in love with this girl. I was pissed. I confronted him. I'm like, what is this? He said, Zainab, you read my journal? I was like, you're not gay? You have a journal.
Zainab Johnson is a comedian, actress, and a podcast host. Her inspirational story is one of many that we like to share with you each and every week on Beta. We can only do that with your support. So please, consider a gift of any amount right now to show your love for Beta. Here's someone to tell you how.
This is the Wisconsin Public Radio Winter Member Drive. I'm Maureen McCollum with Doug Gordon. We're here to ask you to invest a few minutes of your time to support your future WPR listening.
Listener support makes up the largest piece of the funding for the programs you count on. That's why your gift now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 is so important.
Our goal is 35 gifts this hour. This goal is important. It's set to make sure that we have the funding we need for the programs you rely on.
We'll meet this goal one donation at a time. Let's start with yours at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You enjoy listening to Wisconsin Public Radio in part because we're commercial free, and that means we depend on other sources of funding. State, federal, and business sponsors are important, and there's another source that's very important too.
The largest piece of the funding for WPR programs comes from you. Your support makes all the difference. It's the backbone of how things work here. When you give, you keep quality entertainment on the air. So make your gift now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Many listeners become donors out of a sense of shared commitment because you think of WPR as a resource that should be available to all. And because you yourself have been getting value out of it over the past year or two or more, it's time to put something back in.
Yes, so make a donation for yourself and also for the community. The amount is up to you. The important thing is that you participate. Make your first ever gift of, say, $10 or $20 a month at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Wisconsin Public Radio is a great source of information about the nation, the world, and Wisconsin. You value WPR for the lifelong learning it brings to your life. From shows like Beta, you learn something new every day, year after year.
This continuing education is possible only because of support from listeners like you. Like any education, you get out of it what you put into it. Invest in your education at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We have an exciting drawing. You'll have five chances to win a Sonos Move smart speaker when you make a gift of any amount for the WPR programs you rely on now. This portable speaker is perfect for indoor and outdoor listening.
I would use the portable speaker in the backyard while I was doing yard work, listening to Morning Edition or All Things Considered or anything on Wisconsin Public Radio. I might use it while I'm camping, but I'd keep the volume very low.
I would use a portable smart speaker in my kitchen. I would love to have a way to listen to podcasts while I'm cooking, that's not just playing them off my phone.
I would use my portable smart speaker in my kitchen, in my bathroom when I was getting ready for work in the morning. I would use it on my back deck so I could listen to WPR while I'm doing some gardening, just hanging out in the backyard with my dogs.
Sustainers, you're automatically entered. Find all the smart speaker giveaway rules and details at WPR.org/drawing. You can't win if you don't enter, so make your gift of any amount right now. Here's how.
Give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. I'm Maureen McCollum with Doug Gordon. Listener support is the biggest source of funding for the WPR programs you rely on. That's why your support during the Winter Member Drive is so important. Maybe your gift is $10 a month or $100 a month. Whatever amount you choose, that's the right amount.
If you've only discovered Wisconsin Public Radio recently, we want you to know that WPR is listener-driven, not profit-driven. You get more programming per hour because we don't have to take time out for long blocks of commercials.
Our business is to inform and to entertain you and serve up quality programs for you to enjoy. WPR is your station, And it's possible because listeners like you give what they can to support it. Show your support now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Maybe you donated a few years ago and you feel like you've done your part. Well, it's your continued support that keeps WPR going.
If it's been a while since you've donated, this is the perfect time to renew at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. We'll be so happy to have you back.
We know you value your time, and we value your time, too. So giving to Wisconsin Public Radio takes just a few minutes. Tell us your name, contact information, how much you want to give, and how you'd like to pay.
Yeah, it's quick and easy to do, and your gift right now really helps. So take the next few minutes to support the station you count on at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You've made a habit of listening to Wisconsin Public Radio. Now make a habit of donating. It's a good habit, a habit you can be proud of. Get started right now. Help out with your donation of any amount at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You love WPR because it's your source for intelligent radio, and there are costs associated with this quality. That's where you come in. Your support is so important.
You've made the decision to listen to Wisconsin Public Radio. Now make the decision to support WPR financially. It's as simple as that. We're listener supported, and that means your support is crucial at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We're looking for 35 people to join this hour. You make WPR possible when you give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You can support the programs you value and show off your WPR pride when you ask for the 2021 WPR t-shirt. Give $12 a month or more at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And if you're not a sustainer, become one right now. It's easy to set up, and you'll make ongoing monthly donations from your bank account or credit card at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 to provide reliable support for the programs you love.
Paul and Ruth in Ripon say, "We have long supported WPR and are grateful for your wide-ranging service to the state. Keep up the great work on all fronts, news, music, entertainment, and even life." Ginger in Pittsville says, "We have WPR on all day, every day. Balanced news, fun entertainment, interesting stories we don't get anywhere else."
I love that. So join listeners like Ruth and Paul and Ginger with your gift now. It really makes a difference at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And thanks.
Hi, I'm Doug Gordon. Welcome back to Beta from Wisconsin Public Radio. We'd like to take a quick second to thank those of you who have shown your support for the show already and urge those of you who haven't to do so now. We love to showcase up-and-coming literary stars here on Beta. One of our recent favorites was Tommy Orange. Tommy is an enrolled member of the Cheyenne and Arapaho tribes of Oklahoma. He's also the author of There, There, which was a finalist for the Pulitzer Prize. Tommy paid us a visit to talk about his debut novel. We wanted to know when he got the idea for it.
So it was a single moment. I had just found out I was going to be a father. It was in 2010, at the end of 2010. I was driving down to L.A. to go see a show, this pianist, Chilly Gonzalez. And on the drive, the idea just popped right into my head. I'd been working in the urban Indian community in Oakland for many years, and I knew I wanted to write a novel. At that moment, the idea to have a story about urban Indians where all their lives converge at a shooting at a powwow at the Oakland Coliseum. That single sort of container for the novel is what I, you know, is what I thought of in that single moment.
And one of the decisions you made, I don't know if this came right out of the gate, but you decided that you were going to have 12 characters. Why did you decide to have that many characters?
I just like those kinds of novels. I like shifting perspectives. I think it's true to life. I think we get a lot of voices and we have to try to make sense of it, and it all does interconnect somehow. There's also kind of like a monolithic version of what Native people are supposed to look like and be like, you know, stoic or sad or drunk or dumb or historic. Yeah. There's all these negative. So to explore a dynamic range of voices for people that normally have either no voice or it's a false voice or it's a stereotype. It seemed interesting and like a way to expand the range of the way we're thought of.
By having so many characters, it also makes the reader more invested in their thoughts and lives because so many of them are related to one another, and we have to read closely to keep track of who is who, and it allows us to see a wide variety of Native Americans as individuals, which is a key part, maybe the most important part of what makes your novel work so well. What do you think?
Yeah, I think what I'm trying to do and what I think what novels try to do and at their best succeed greatly is make people have empathy for people in lives that they may not otherwise think of or not have the same empathy for. Put people in a whole bunch of different shoes, give them a world and what it feels like, and they'll understand more. And I think, you know, expand on what humanity is and all that it entails.
Mm-hmm. And all 12 of the characters, correct me if I'm wrong, but all 12 of them are members of the working class, right? That was probably a conscious decision on your part?
Definitely. I mean, I think when you look at a lot of literature, it is upper middle class. It's often New York based. There's often college educated characters. A lot of times not very much happens. Ennui is the biggest problem.
Yeah, that's true.
So, I stuff happened in my life, and the people that I've known have been working class, and so I wanted to represent that in literature, and it almost seemed like, I mean, it hasn't not been done, but it's not done enough, and literature belongs everywhere, not just in the upper middle class.
Yeah, definitely. I love the prologue. It was extremely powerful, and it told me a lot of very heartbreaking history that I'm embarrassed to admit that I wasn't familiar with. Why did you want to open your book this way?
Well, first, I just like prologues and what they do. I like that they contextualize the story before you get there. I think you can be experimental with a prologue, and I like that. I also like that you can skip it. Some people don't like prologues, and you can skip it, and it's not necessary. I mean, I think it is necessary for my book, but you can skip it.
Oh, and, yeah.
You know, a lot of times people go back mm-hmm. If they're interested enough in the book, then they'll read it later. But also, you know, probably the biggest reason was to understand what an urban Indian is. You kind of have to go back to relocation, which is embedded in termination policy, which was like kill the Indian, save the man. And genocidal policy leads to genocide, real genocide, which happened. In various different kinds of cases. And I grew up hearing the Sand Creek Massacre story. I knew I wanted that to be a part of the prologue. So just before you can get to the urban Indian story in contemporary times, I really wanted to get everyone who's reading the book on the same page about how we got there.
One of my favorite characters in there is Opal Viola Victoria Bearshield. Can you tell me a bit about her?
Yeah, she was one of the earlier characters to appear. First year of writing the book, I was just sort of auditioning voices. I was trying out different voices almost on a daily basis for that first year. Whatever felt like it had staying power, it stuck or felt distinct and it felt like a sort of effortlessness to it, mm-hmm. I would follow that voice. Mm-hmm. And Opal appeared early on.
Is there any one character among the 12 characters in there that is based on you?
I would say they're all more me than anyone else. I worked in various different storytelling capacities over the years through an organization out of Berkeley and also at the center that I worked at, we had a storytelling project. So I worked with a lot of people's stories and came to feel that I would never want to tell somebody else's story or sort of steal somebody's story.
Where does the title there come from?
Gertrude Stein says about Oakland in everybody's autobiography. Somebody's asking, why doesn't she write about Oakland? And she says, well, there is no there. When I came across that doing research for the novel, it just struck me as true of the Native experience and what was there before. There's no more there, what it looked like to be Native before. So finding a way to belong to something that is no longer visible and feels like it may not have a there, specifically for people living in Oakland and trying to find a way to belong to your environment and where you were born and raised. So there being the reference that Gertrude Stein was talking about, and there being the experience of all these characters, the there is what I'm trying to get at. Also, people have used that quote out of context to talk about how Oakland has no sense of place or no soul or no character, which is a very convenient position to have for a city getting gentrified. Like, there's nothing there anyway. We can just, you know, that's the sort of position that settlers had. Like, it's just a wilderness that we can march across and there's no one here. There's a sense that, you know, the way Indians were here doesn't count because we're savages. And that's the way, you know, even in the Declaration of Independence, people were referred to as merciless savages. That's still in there.
Following up on there, it's also the title. It's also the name of a Radiohead song, which you reference in the book, don't you?
Yeah, that was a serendipitous moment. So I decided on there as a title. Hail to the Thief is the album that's on. But I actually pirated that album. And the pirated version that I got only had track 01, track 02, all the way down to, I think, 14 songs on that album. And so I knew the song is number 9 on Hail to the Thief. I stumbled on the fact that it was called There, There, because I Googled There, There to see if it was a title for somebody else's book. So the lyrics to There, There, the song, they match the theme of the book. So, like, one of the lyrics is, just because you feel it doesn't mean it's there. So you have these characters sort of questioning their authenticity, and they feel like they're Indian, but what does that mean?
Yeah.
And we are accidents waiting to happen is another line from that song, and that's sort of, you know, the trajectory of the book is very much that.
You created the word Indianing, which you use very effectively in your novel. Can you tell me how you came up with that word and what it means to you?
Yeah, I think particularly with Native people, if somebody finds out you're Native, well, one of the first things that they say, or in my experience, and this happened on the tour recently, they ask me if I'm Native, and I say yes, and then the follow-up is always, well, how much? And so people want to know what makes you Indian, whether it's blood or what do you do, the verb of Indianing. In college, I wrote a paper on called Chekhov's Indian, so if the gun appears in the first act, mm-hmm. it's going to go off by the third.
Yeah.
Basically talking about how to write Indian without doing the typically Indian stuff. If you introduce an Indian, do they have to do something Indian? And this is all based on stereotype and authenticity, and the stick we have to measure ourselves by is this old version of what being Indian is, and we need to expand the conversation about how many different things it can mean.
What does it mean for you to be Native American here in 2018?
My particular experience, it sort of is heavily now embedded in being a Native author and speaking mm-hmm. about, you know, what that means.
Yeah.
So it's become abstracted in a way.
Mm.
Before the book, it's just who I am. Like, I don't know, there's no separate way for me to think of, like, well, what if I wasn't? You know, it's something that I've known from a very young age, and my dad did a good job of making sure that we knew where we come from. And my sister just became fluent, and I'm very interested in learning more about that, because a lot of Cheyenne values and belief systems is embedded in the language itself. It's a little harder to teach.
Tommy Orange is the author of the critically acclaimed novel, They're There. If you enjoy hearing from some of the best authors in the country, please let us know with a show of support right now. Your contribution goes a long way to ensure that Beta can keep delivering these conversations to you each week. So please think about making a gift to WPR. Here's how you can do it.
This is the Wisconsin Public Radio Winter Member Drive. Hello, I'm Maureen McCollum with host of Beta, Doug Gordon. And we're here to ask you to invest a few minutes of time to support your future WPR listening.
Listener support makes up the largest piece of the funding for the programs you count on, programs like Beta. That's why your gift now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 is so important.
This hour, when 35 people join in, funding is on track for Beta and all the other WPR programs you care about. So make your gift now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
WPR is listener-supported. Cast your vote right now for innovative programming with your gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
WPR is making a concerted effort to incubate new programs, and Beta actually came for this search for new talent and content. So Doug, he brings his fun and intellectual style to the show. And of course, there's Steve Gotcher, who keeps the show moving with his exceptional sound design. Is that right, Doug?
Yes, that's exactly right. The velvety textures that only Steve Gotcher can provide. You might have a monthly subscription for your cell phone and Netflix. Now we're asking you to support WPR like you pay for other services you rely on.
The difference here is that you decide how much to give. Support the programs that are a part of your day. Become a WPR sustainer. Choose a monthly gift amount that works for you. Then set up ongoing installments at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
One listener made their donation and said, "We could live without WPR, though we sure wouldn't want to." Maybe you feel the same way, that listening to WPR makes your life better.
Whether it's keeping up with the news, enjoying music, the laughs you get from the weekend shows, or the fascinating discussions on the Ideas Network, there's always something good to listen to.
Because WPR makes your life better, help keep it going. Your gift right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 is so important.
This member drive supports the programs you love in style with the new WPR t-shirt. This super comfy heather gray t-shirt features Wisconsin state symbols in the night sky.
The WPR t-shirt looks like you could find it at a boutique store. It looks really cool. I like how it has all the different animals. It feels very connected to nature.
It's got a deer and a bird and a badger all on a nice gray t-shirt, and it looks kind of like constellations in the night sky.
A dark gray t-shirt with light purple Wisconsin state symbols on there that also have these constellations. Looks super comfy.
Ask for yours now when you give $12 a month or more. Here's how.
Go to WPR.org or 888-202-2552 to make your donation. Hi, I'm Maureen McCollum with host of Beta, Doug Gordon. Your support during this winter member drive makes the WPR programs you rely on possible. Your gift of $10 or $20 a month, whatever amount you choose, that's the right amount.
Many of the things you pay for improve your quality of life, like good coffee or a locally brewed beer, dinner with friends, or a fun activity with your kids.
Listening to WPR is just like those other things that are worth paying for. It enriches your life. It makes your day better. Support what's important to you. Give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
As the donor, you get to decide how much to give, and maybe $100 or $200 a month is the right amount for you.
That might be what you spend every month on takeout or entertainment, for example. Things you enjoy and things that make your life better, just like listening to WPR. The important thing is that you decide what amount is right for you and then make your gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
If you've already renewed or make ongoing monthly gifts as a sustainer, thank you. Listeners who renew and monthly sustainers are the backbone of WPR.
And if you haven't given yet, join the thousands of other WPR members by donating at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We're looking for 35 people to join in this hour. You make WPR possible with your gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
As an added bonus for supporting the programs you love, you'll be entered in an exciting drawing today. Five lucky people will win a portable smart speaker, the Sonos Move. No contribution is necessary. See WPR.org/drawing for details. Better yet, you're automatically entered when you give any amount at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Sustainers making ongoing monthly gifts, you're automatically entered.
If you're not a sustainer, become one right now. It's easy to set up the monthly donations from your bank account or credit card at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. You'll provide ongoing support for the programs you love and get automatically entered in the drawings we have during member drives.
You know, Doug, one of the things I love about member drives is hearing from some of our listeners. So we heard from Darlene in Madison, who says, "Wonderful programming. Inspirational, educational, and enjoyable." Charlene in Wanakee says, "Every day you bring me interesting conversations, inspiring authors and books, recipes, scientific insights, laughter, and sometimes tears. You are the best radio station around. Keep up the good work."
Thank you, Darlene and Charlene. Join listeners like them with your gift now. It really makes a difference at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Thank you. Hi, I'm Doug Gordon. Welcome back to this special edition of Beta. A big thanks to those of you who have contributed this hour. And if you'd like to, think about doing it right now. We're nearing the end of the show. Before we go, let's do a little two-step. When documentary filmmaker Ken Burns went looking for a country music expert, he looked no further than Wisconsin's Bill Malone. Bill is the author of Country Music USA, and he says he was born into country music.
Well, it's the first music I ever heard. I like to think that the music my mother sang was country music. She didn't know where it came from. Some of it came from the church. She was an ardent Pentecostal, and she poured out her heart in music. Songs like Farther Along and We'll Understand It Better By and By. That was a way of coping with a semi-isolated existence on a East Texas cotton farm. So I heard her singing, and I knew how much that music meant to her, and it rubbed off on me. And then, of course, in 1939, Daddy came in with a Philco battery-powered radio.
Do you remember some of the first artists you heard on the old Philco radio? Some particular songs that really resonated with you?
One song in particular, it'll always be a cherished memory, was one called The Last Letter. People still sing that today. But we heard a man named Rex Griffin singing it. Rex was like so many of the country musicians at that time. He was an itinerant. He moved from one radio station to another until the territory was played out, as they called it. Then he would move on to another station. But we had a guitar. My older brother worked real hard for a neighbor to get a real cheap, probably a Sears Roebuck guitar. He started learning a few chords on it. And then the next brother, who's still alive, he picked it up too. And by the time I came along, I was 8 years younger than they were. And when I started playing the guitar, I made it a point to learn on that same song, The Last Letter, with my mother sitting by, you know, and give me encouragement, telling me when I needed to change chords. So, oh, you got to change there, Billy, you know.
Why do you treat me as if I were only a friend? What have I done that has made you so different and cold? Sometimes I wonder if you'll be contented again. Will you be happy when you are withered and old?
You were at the University of Texas at Austin. This was, I think, 1954 is when you enrolled, and then you had this life-changing moment in 1960. Can you tell me about that?
I got all three of my degrees at UT Austin. I had no earthly idea about what I wanted to write about. And my supervising professor was a fellow named Joe Franz. One day, I took a trip with him and a couple of other graduate students down to Houston to watch the Texas Longhorns play in the Blue Bonnet Bowl against Alabama. And we sang all the way down there. And then at dinner time, I believe it was that first evening, just out of the blue, Dr. Franz said, well, you know, you love this music so much. Why don't you write a history of Nashville publishing? And I thought, you mean you can actually write on something you love? That's unheard of. So I got into the subject and wrote not just a history of Nashville Public, but a general history of the entire phenomenon. Country music, I tackled its folk music beginnings before commercialization. Then I picked up with radio and recording and talked about how it evolved over the years. Mm-hmm. So that's the way Country Music USA came about.
Your dissertation was published in 1968 as the book Country Music USA, which is considered by many to be the Bible of country music. What were you trying to do? What were you trying to accomplish when you wrote it?
I felt like that the general history needed to be told quickly because I wasn't sure what was going to happen to this music because rock and roll had come along first with Elvis in 1954. And then the record companies, one after another, began looking for people who could who sounded like Elvis. And the performers themselves began to change their styles and adapt them to meet the needs of this new youth audience that was becoming paramount in the United States. Because there was a period of time there when traditional country music, as I knew it, virtually disappeared from the jukeboxes and from the radio DJ shows. You couldn't hear a fiddle or a steel guitar. I want to tell the story of this music, well, it needs to be told, and when there are still people around who can tell me the story.
I want to ask you about one of the all-time country greats, George Jones, who has been described as the Frank Sinatra of country music. What's your take on Jones?
I think he's the greatest singer country music ever had.
Yeah.
He might be as good as anybody in the pop ranks of any type.
Do you have a favorite George Jones song?
The Grand Tour.
Yeah, that's a classic, yeah.
Almost gets swallowed up by the instrumentation, but he puts his heart and soul into it. You can feel his anguish, and I think that's the mark of a great country singer. He or she can make you think that the song is written specially for you. See, I understand what you're going through, because I've gone through it too.
There's her rings, all her things, and her clothes are in the closet. Like she left them when she tore my world apart.
Who are the most influential women in the history of country music?
Kitty Wells has to be toward the top.
Yeah.
Because this unassuming and just as non-threatening as any woman could be, but yet was singing songs like "It Wasn't God Who Made Honky Tonk Angels." And I think she gave encouragement to other women to sing. So she influenced a lot of the women who came along in the early and mid-1950s. Of course, then Patsy Cline.
Yeah.
Patsy Cline was such a great singer that she quickly lost identification as a country singer.
Yeah, she transcended country and became known in the pop circles.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's kind of interesting because when she started out, she wanted to do straight country. She wanted to dress like a cowgirl, which she did. And she resisted at first some of the songs that became big hits for her. But when they did, and today, you know, go almost anywhere in the country, restaurant or supper club, and in the background, you can hear some Patsy Cline being sung.
You're cheating hard will make you weep. You'll cry.
What do you think of today's contemporary country music?
Well, when I want to listen to country music, I generally pull out my CDs and old records.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm still looking for old-time songs that I haven't heard lately or never have heard. And in today's scene, I look for people who don't necessarily imitate the past, but they build upon it.
Yeah.
They have a sense of roots. They seem to have a reverence for the working class roots of the music. And then they take that and go and make their own sound. I'm referring to people like Tim O'Brien,
yeah,
who I think is the most versatile person out there today playing.
Yeah.
Iris DeMent.
Oh, yeah. She's great. Yeah.
Everybody is wondering what and where they all came from. Everybody is worrying about where they're going to go when the whole thing's done. But no one knows for certain, and so it's all the same to me.
You've been working with Ken Burns on this new documentary series about country music that's scheduled to air in the fall. Can you tell me about what that experience has been like working with Ken?
Oh, it's wonderful. I've for a few years now, I've been a consultant to the Ken Burns program. I read scripts and critique them and send them back. And then I believe it was in 2014, I went to New York and was interviewed for 2 or 3 hours. So they asked me questions spanning the entire history of country music.
Right. So you're going to show up as one of the talking heads in the documentary.
Yeah. And October of last year, I guess it was, we went to Walpole, New Hampshire, and sat down and watched the pre-screening. It was just a wonderful experience almost everybody was tearful by the time it was over.
Yeah.
You know, for one thing, to think of all the people that you see on the screen who have died since the filming began. And in my case, you know, I was tearful because I remember any time I start talking about my mother, I'm likely to break into tears. But she's the person that introduced me to this music, and it, to me, it's her culture. And I'm just pleased that I'm able to keep it alive and to document it and to commemorate it. So I felt, as I watched the Ken Burns screening, I felt this is a validation of my life's work and of the music that I've always loved.
Bill Malone is one of the leading authorities on American country music, and that's why he's a featured talking head in the Ken Burns docuseries Country Music. We hope you love Beta as much as Bill Malone loves country music. So as we pass around our 10-gallon Stetson one last time, we hope you show your support for Beta with a gift right now. It's the surefire way to ensure that all of your favorite weekend shows on Wisconsin Public Radio will be there for years to come. Here's someone who can help you.
This is the Wisconsin Public Radio Winter Member Drive. Hi, I'm Maureen McCollum with host of Beta, Doug Gordon. The largest source of funding for WPR programs is from listeners like you. This drive is your chance to support all the programs you listen to throughout the year, like Beta. Take this important step when you donate at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
When 35 people join in, we'll be on track to support the programs you enjoy and rely on every day.
WPR programs are listener-powered, and that means that your donation right now makes a difference at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
WPR programs are possible in very large part thanks to the support of listeners like yourself. Make your gift now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And you know that you're an integral part to making everything you enjoy on WPR possible.
Beta adds a ton of fun to an already entertaining weekend lineup on WPR. You know, Doug comes from an improv background, so you never know where the interview's going to go. He seeks out quirky stories and perspective you're really not going to hear anywhere else, which makes for a very interesting show every week.
Enjoy the 2021 USA-made WPR t-shirt. It has a purple design showcasing Wisconsin state symbols on a soft heather gray tee. Show off your WPR pride everywhere you go. Ask for your t-shirt when you make your gift of $12 a month or more at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We hear great stories from WPR listeners every day, and they're usually about how WPR impacts their lives. The donor comments you hear during the member drive, these are really good examples.
These stories remind us of how we're connected to each other as a community. Because WPR programs engage you, inspire you, and make you think, make a contribution right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. You'll make WPR experiences possible for you and for your community.
I'm Marcy from Madison, Wisconsin. I'm a sustainer of Wisconsin Public Radio. First of all, the word obsessed has been used. With public radio, I've been listening to nothing but public radio for probably upwards of 20-some years. When I made a transition moving back to Wisconsin after being gone for 20-some years, it was a great way for me to sort of get back to what was going on, feeling involved. It was a great connection, and I think that's probably the word that I think of the most. I feel very connected when I'm listening to public radio. I'm a sustaining member because I don't have to think about it. Well, first of all, it's so easy. I don't have to do anything. I wish all my bills could just magically be paid that way. And although it's not a bill for what it gives back to me, it is something that I'm willing to pay for. It enriches my life. It's invaluable to me, so I'm happy to give back.
Go to WPR.org or 888-202-2552 to make your donation in support of the programs you count on. Hi, I'm Maureen McCollum with Doug Gordon, host of Beta. Your support today of Wisconsin Public Radio keeps all the programs you enjoy going strong. Whether your contribution is $10 a month or $100 a month, we really appreciate and count on your gift.
Many of us are committed to making our communities better. Maybe you help out at the local school, pick up litter in your neighborhood, or cook a meal for friends or family who need your support. Your financial contribution to Wisconsin Public Radio makes the community a better place, too.
Your investment, together with donations from others, makes the news, talk, and music on WPR available to everyone. We're proud to be an important part of the Wisconsin community, and in large part, that's thanks to you. Join in now with your gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
When you became a regular listener to Wisconsin Public Radio, you took an important first step. Now, take the next step and become a financial supporter.
That's an important step because WPR relies on listener support. And it's easy to donate. Decide how much you'd like to give. Maybe $10 a month or $120 is a great starting point. And then make your gift. It'll just take a few minutes at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Maybe you donated a few years ago and you feel like you've done your part. Well, it's your continued support that keeps WPR going.
If it's been a while since you've donated, this is the perfect time to renew at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. We'll be so happy to have you back.
You've made a habit of listening to Wisconsin Public Radio. Now make a habit of donating. It's a good habit, a habit you can be proud of. Get started right now. Help out with your donation of any amount at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You love WPR because it's your source for intelligent radio, and there are costs associated with this quality. That's where you come in. Your support is so important.
Making a gift is quick and easy. You'll be finished in no time at all. Your contribution in any amount, say $10 or $20 a month, at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 makes WPR possible.
When 35 people support WPR programs this hour, we will meet our goal. WPR is listener-powered, and that's why your gift now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 is so important.
The lovely 2021 WPR T-shirt is USA-made and printed right here in Wisconsin. Give $12 a month or more at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 and ask for your T-shirt.
If you're a sustaining member making ongoing monthly gifts, thank you. Make today the day you increase your support of WPR by $5 or $10 a month or whatever amount you choose at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Elizabeth in Galesburg, Illinois says, WPR remains a valuable source of news and information in our home, and we enjoy many of the entertainment programs. Suzette in Watertown says, I look forward to weekend programming, which always makes me laugh, makes me think, entertains, educates, and feeds my spirit.
I love that. Join listeners like Elizabeth and Suzette with your gift now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552, and thank you.